painting a mural, for example, every time I do one, I call it a hothead, and it's once I get the drawing up there, and I'm satisfied that my map is going to work, and that's how it needs to be done. And then I put the brush to the wall for the first time, and I get this, like, rush of anxiety, like the hothead. And because I get this flood of, this is going to take forever, or it's going to be so difficult going through the cracks of the bricks, then I get that worry that, like, it's going to look like a crappy version of something that I would do, as if I become embarrassed of it right away. I have that, it's like a defeatist sort of flood of emotion over me, where it's like I feel outnumbered and I'm not going to be able to uphold that standard. In that way, yes, that standard is holding me back and I need to ditch that and get comfortable with it, or I'm not going to be functional and it will be that crappy version of my effort.
Hi, this is Daphne, and welcome to episode 9 of the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations about art, creativity, and courage with artists, creatives, and makers. My guest today is an illustrator, painter, and muralist. He makes art accessible by putting it where anyone can see it, on walls, flyers, and in galleries. He believes art belongs to everyone, and everyone's life is made richer through art. He is Nathaniel Roney, and you can find him over at nathanielroney.com. In this interview, Nathaniel and I talk about the value of street art, the power of art to shake up a stagnant society, how to move through hothead, the potentially paralyzing anxiety every artist faces, creativity as the highest pursuit, and how to bring art into every part of your life. May you enjoy this conversation, and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Hey, Nathaniel, welcome to the Creativity Podcast. It's great to have you here.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I like to begin with your creativity story, which is really how creativity showed up for you as a child, however you define creativity, how it showed up for you early on in your life.
For the most part, I consider the creative experience coming from trying to make something out of, not necessarily nothing, but a need to make something exist out of other things that are not necessarily existing in that creative vision. I draw a lot of my interest in making things and being mostly visually stimulated by the things around me and having a desire to participate in it through skateboarding. I played baseball all growing up as a kid, and slowly brought on skateboarding into every day of my life. With skateboarding comes very DIY approach to being creative, filling your time even, quote-unquote, doing something with your life and being passionate about it. For the most part, in the skateboarding industry, skateboarders make their graphics, skateboarders pick the tunes to go with their video parts. The artistic world informs then this physical act of throwing yourself around in concrete. I was always attracted to that because it felt like it was something I could just walk outside and with a few minimal tools, which requires some version of a budget or a gracious enough mother to take you to the skate shop. With just a few things, you can just kind of go and invent an entire day's worth of work, or more than a day's worth of work. Can't even get to it. That at the same time creates a drive and a discipline if you want it bad enough that you can never scratch that itch the whole way. Most importantly, it made it practical that you could enter a artistic lifestyle. And then the goal from that point on really became how can I consume the rest of my life with that spirit as I grow into an adult and have to pay bills and do all the things that adults do.
That's amazing. I've never actually heard someone describe skateboarding that way. And
yeah,
to describe it as this world of creativity. And what's interesting is you said that it helps you scratch the itch, like you can never really go the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Say more of what you mean by that.
Like the ideas are almost saturating the insides of that creative spirit. There's plenty of ideas to get to. It becomes sort of hazy almost because there's so many sort of visions that I see that can be done or are within my opportunity to exploit and produce. The day-to-day just becomes like kind of scratching an itch. It's going to be there when you wake up. It's probably there while you're sleeping and not working. So it's trying to fulfill every day and getting close to that greater body of work at the end of a lifetime is a consuming drive that keeps the day-to-day functional.
Yeah, and I definitely understand what you mean by so many ideas that it becomes almost hazy. So how do you, with all of these ideas, how do you start to almost push aside what feels like the fog of the many ideas to find the one that you're going to zoom in on and really focus in on for that period of time?
I guess it's always a relationship of the convenience and of the access to executing the idea, and then also your priorities. Now that I'm a freelance full-time artist, paying gig hits that first priority. So you kind of make those things work, or when they come, you try to get to them as soon as possible and get as close to that end game as quickly as possible, getting paid. In terms of deciphering through the fog, I feel like I use an approach that gets into the fog and let it kind of consume you a little bit through list making, prioritizing lists that go on and on and on. A lot of from one list to the next list is taking the things that didn't get crossed off the previous list. You know, maybe a few lose from the transition from one boat to the next, but in itself, that kind of prioritizes where the state of those ideas are and how vibrant or appropriate they are. The demands of being a functional human in society sort of do a lot of that determining, but things definitely get lost through the crack. The experiences you do have in producing one idea to the next then also can not degrade the value of another idea, but it's not what it was when you first thought of it or when it was first conceived. Also, not to say that you don't carry it with you and it doesn't evolve on its own as you continue experiencing and working on other things.
Right. So it doesn't necessarily mean just because you don't choose certain ideas at that time that they're not percolating inside of you and will come out in some other form, in some other way further down the way. Yeah.
Definitely. See, kind of just a suitcase of things that you're carrying around. And for the most part, you're just snowballing all of the things that inform what your bank of ideas are, which is probably like a single entity that's collecting stuff along the way.
Yeah, just like we are, just like an individual is a single entity.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
I want to ask you, Nathaniel, it's like so many different directions we could go, and one of the things that stands out for me a lot in looking over your art and looking over the statements that you make about your art is this sense of making a statement, of making a difference, that you have strong opinions about where the world is at and in many ways how screwed up things are and out of balance and not equal. So I want to ask how you use your art to communicate to the world like your place in it and your power in your place in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I hear you there. This might sound funny, but a lot of it comes from the idea that writing is very difficult to do. And it's excruciatingly hard work for me personally, as in like long form, either narrative or critical opinion-based writing. And then I also have not an incredible amount of hope if I were to invest in just word on page in the traditional formats. I'm naturally inclined to say that I don't have the hope that it would get to the audiences I want it to in a way that a visual statement I feel like has much more legs and greater access to audiences that then I also feel like I came from and was inspired by. You have access to more types of creative consumers with an image.
You know, one of the things that you had written was that inadequate communication is the only thing that has ever happened. So how do you see your art communicating what you want to say? Like why make art with a message if inadequate communication is all that's ever happened?
To try to defeat that, to try to have something else to happen, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, shot in the dark. I've held on to that phrase for a second because I like what it does. It presents a problem. And then by involving, whether you're creating yourself or consuming the creation, just experiencing it all, you're in some way involving yourself in the solution to that problem. It seems as though, at least as I observe them, a lot of our social hang-ups are on the various parties not really understanding where those various parties are coming from.
So how do you use your art to try to bring the various parties to a more connected understanding or a deeper understanding?
I try to be at least fair with it. In terms of like a gallery setting, I try to make artworks certainly available to see. I try to break down the pressure of like the stuffiness of buying things and then buying expensive things, and then you're essentially buying like material items that don't have utilitarian function in our lives. You know, you're not buying a blender or a microwave, you're buying an idea to hang on a wall, essentially. I don't want to participate myself in the community where that's pretty an exclusive environment. And if, yes, artworks do cost money, I try to make them as affordable as possible, but I also try to push the fact that they're meant to be consumed on the basis as they were delivered. And if it's in a gallery setting, all that I ask is that you come into the room and experience it. And then it's a success. Everything else would be almost supplemental to the purpose of building an experience.
It's interesting because my husband's reading a book by a poet, William Stafford, and he talks about this idea of what art is, and that a lot of times we distance ourselves from art by moving into this place of analyzing and intellectualizing and trying to figure it out. And we separate ourselves from the actual process of just being in it, of feeling it, of dropping into this process of creation. And it's interesting because this is what you're saying right now of if I make a piece and I hang it in a gallery, all that I'm asking is that you come into the gallery and see it. You don't need to consume it. You don't need to take it home. It doesn't need to be this exclusive thing. I'm just asking you to drop into it. And
right, yeah. There's a timidness that is also can go off the rails, even just like conversing about it. Or that, first of all, the notion that there's like an answer to it, there's the right way to experience it as opposed to the wrong way. And then maybe even there's like a social pressure of having to go into a space and then talk about the work. I do always sense a little bit of staying away from those stereotypes of experiencing artwork in the gallery setting. Fantasize about a more wild, artistically liberated, everyone's really engaged in what is happening. A lot in the same way that people consume music, you know, the lights off, dancing, feeling it, so to speak.
The way that you try to break that down and bring it, make it something that's accessible to all is by, it sounds like one, making it as available as possible. And are there other ways that you feel you try to make art accessible?
Two other ways. Well, one kind of folds into the other. It would be the quote unquote street experience, the outside of the walls, and it's in one the street where they're just the more collective version of our societies, because the street is some representation of a public space, main thoroughfare. And with that, the printed page. I'm a designer as well, graphic designer, and I very much appreciate newspapers, magazines. Those were kind of the vehicles of my initial inspirations to make images, because that's something that can be picked up. You can leave it on the side of a bench. You can put it in an official newspaper box if you're an official publication. You can graffiti the side of a building. You can get permission to do that. You can hang up a flyer on a post. You know, as a full-time pedestrian, it's also something that's very hands-on and immediate to me in my own life as a consumer. So I have a lot of opportunities to see myself and my work in that format, and then to also imagine, quote-unquote, folks like me or in the position like me walking down the street and have that perspective. That makes a painting gallery a very tucked away, far away place to get to.
So then how do you reconcile for yourself? I get that you have to make a living, you have to pay your bills. How do you find, where does art and money meet for you?
I first moved to Asheville. I worked for Mountain Express and laid out their paper for 7 years, and I've been on my own for another 3 or 4, I believe. And it's still difficult, slow process to A, charge full price, and then B, to they're asking for that. Because I feel like I'm romantic enough to the work, and it's like it is personal, almost anything I'm doing, even if it has a commercial purpose to it, like painting a sign or something like that. it's close enough that it there's a little bit of me that would be there anyway, doing it not necessarily for free. It's a bad word to use when you're in this position, but you'd be doing it without her, with or without that pay or that justified pay. I mean, it probably has a lot to do with just my own work ethic and idealized work ethic. But it's finicky, and I feel like there's probably a little bit of an immaturity there that I kind of actively hold on to, because I don't want that to go away.
Well, and that's what allows you, I think, in large part, to be an artist, to keep art as
Absolutely.
Your career. It's like
it inspires the discipline, definitely. That's why I essentially don't want to let it go, because it feels like that's the bread and butter. That's what makes me do it. Yeah. Otherwise, it would feel a lot more superficial, and I would imagine myself would lose interest if I didn't have that deep connection with it.
One of the things, Nathaniel, you just mentioned was your idealized work ethic. And you had said at one point in a painting about one of a mural that you did, as usual, my standards became the greatest challenge, or my standard became the greatest challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little more about what you mean by your idealized work ethic, or your standards becoming your biggest challenge.
Goes a lot into what I was just chatting on, that this is corny, but like the good enough isn't good enough sort of concept, that just like reaching that main bar. And I don't know if I have a clear idea of what my standards are, or if I could articulate those standards to someone else. But one of those standards, a personal standard, is that whatever the bar of just enough, like get it done, get it over with, attitude attached to it, is ultimately not enough. It needs to be a little bit more observed, and there's more substance in something, any sort of project or deed, than that to be the final experience.
That makes sense with the opinions that you express about our society and our culture and where we're at, because it's like, mm-hmm. there's this sense of we could be doing so much better than this. This is definitely not good enough.
Right. I also feel like those standards are inspiring, because I feel like when you take whether it's the time, whether it's walking to use your physical body to get there and to carry the stuff and to do it on this sort of like really ground level, if not, you know, intentionally difficult position that you might put yourself in. And I feel like you get to observe it in such a different way. A lot of the things that go by with convenience and efficiency, you don't experience those details. And then when you do experience those details without the opportunities of convenience and efficiency, you kind of understand the framework a lot better. In the case of a mural, I'm calmer just standing there for 10 hours a day staring into a wall, because you kind of have more to look at. And you know, my mom came by once when she was in town watching me paint, and she just couldn't understand why I would be interested in doing such a seemingly like a task that just void of dynamic or interesting things that are just changing things, you know, so sterile and stagnant.
Huh.
As she sees it, I feel like if you stare into the light, you start to see something different.
Well, and that's so fascinating, because I don't see anything sterile or stagnant about your art, like at
mm-hmm.
all. And my understanding of what you're wanting to do with your art is like stimulate that change, or stimulate ideas, stimulate different perspectives on things, so that it shakes
yeah.
things up a bit, if not a
sure.
lot. Yeah.
And reflecting on the experiences I have with my friends and colleagues and other people, and where it feels like our experiences might be different, I want to then find what those differences are, and there's some sort of subtlety underneath the surface, and then I get inspired. Like, I want to try to find those things and exploit them and bring them into, characterize them into the playing field that more folks are on.
And the other thing about that is that, like you mentioned, say, a blender or something earlier, like this is something concrete. This is something that we can define and understand its usefulness, whereas with art, we might wonder, what is the
mm-hmm.
place for art? And what's fascinating about that is a blender, once you know what it is what it is. Like, it serves its purpose. It becomes somewhat stale in just
yeah.
the fact that this is it. It's a blender. It doesn't do
right.
more than that.
You don't really grow with it. It doesn't reflect your own sort of relationship with it.
And that is one of, I think, the most important pieces, like values of art, is that it does keep stirring things up. It does keep providing new perspectives and new ways of looking and growing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So going back again to this process, I'm curious, with the standards that you do have, how you are able to get out of the way of them.
What do you mean by get out of the way?
So that you can create and not have them like hold you back. So a lot of times with artists, as you're creating something, you can be thinking, oh God, I really need to be doing it this way, or this isn't working. And at some point we have to just shut that voice up so that we can drop into the process and just create.
Mm-hmm.
So with your standards of, I want it to be this way, or whatever, however your standards show up for you, how do you get them out of the way so that you can just create?
I don't know, actually. I feel like I try to buddy up with them by putting them in the foreground to make that challenge the thing to get comfortable with. Painting a mural, for example, every time I do one, I call it a hothead, and it's once I get the drawing up there, and I'm satisfied that my map is going to work and that's how it needs to be done. And then I put the brush to the wall for the first time, and I get this like rush of anxiety, the hothead. And because I get this flood of, this is going to take forever, or it's going to be so difficult going through the cracks of the bricks, then I get that worry that like it's going to look like a crappy version of something that I would do, as if I become embarrassed of it right away. I have that, it's like a defeatist sort of flood of emotion over me, where it's like I feel outnumbered and I'm not going to be able to uphold that standard. In that way, yes, that standard is holding me back and I need to ditch that and get comfortable with it, or I'm not going to be functional and it will be that crappy version of my effort. So do the hard walk and you kind of outlast the slight panic attack. Or maybe I could attribute it to similar to having a hangover rather than taking Advil and taking a nap, just slowly drink water and pound through your day like you would if you felt great. Because it will go away, and I know it's like you have a faith in that process. If you kind of look at it headstrong, you'll perhaps defeat it faster. You at least get half your day done rather than sleeping it off and cashing the whole thing in.
What did baseball or skateboarding teach you about this process of, like, especially baseball? I mean, my son plays baseball. I can't imagine you get, you're up there. Like, there's nowhere to go when you're,
right,
like, up at bat.
And there's no other way to do it except to swing and hit it. Big concepts of humility in both of those cases, just physical limitation. And you have to be able to get your brain to tell your body what to do when it really doesn't want to do it. It's not natural for it to want to do it. And, the success rate is also very, very low. Yeah, humility, definitely. Being comfortable with not succeeding. With the art, I feel like you can, like a painting at least, if you're making something out of nothing, you can always like get it right. It's not like you had your chance and you had your, you know, you had your three strikes. The baseball definitely adds like an urgency to that sort of discipline or that situation to be in. Art, it's liberated because it doesn't have that urgency. It can wait. For the most part, in a non-commercial setting, it can wait, or it can keep being worked, or it can flub its way through a long, misguided process, and then all of a sudden you find that answer if you work it. If you work it, it'll find work one way or another.
Yeah, and I like how you say you can always get it right.
Like, right.
And I think that is something that gets forgotten a lot as we get older and we come more into there's a right way and there's a wrong way and it's good or it's bad. It's like, no, you're the one that's deciding that, both as the one who's making the art and as the one who's viewing the art.
Definitely. Definitely.
One of the things that you say on your website is the creative lifestyle is the most prominent of human experiences. Explain what you mean by that.
I feel like it might sound generic to say, it's in all of us, so to speak, in the way that I feel like we all have access to a creative lifestyle and having a personal relationship with it. even to exploiting it to the whole of your lifestyle. There's that, it's in all of us, and then I feel like in a slightly, you know, spiritual way that we should all be putting that into the whole of our lives. You know, we eat, drink, sleep, need shelter. I feel like we should also then be creatively involved with what then makes up the content of our lives. It's in direct relationship to driving a car up and down the road every day to the same cubicle to sit there to do something that doesn't necessarily make something for someone else, and then to accept your pay and your benefit and go back home. You know, I mean, I have the same habits in my own life, but I feel like there's a lot of limited personalities out there that have stuff inside of them that we don't get to see. We don't get to experience. The creative conversation doesn't seem to have as many people in it as there should be. Mm-hmm. It could be wildly diverse and exponentially dynamic in relationship to how we compartmentalize the communities and societies we live in now.
When you said encouraging people to be creatively involved with what makes up the content of our lives, for, let's just take a typical day of driving to work and doing the work thing and then driving home and maybe doing the family thing, how do you see someone becoming more creatively involved? What does that mean to become more creatively involved in that content?
Having taste. Obviously, these are difficult things to protest or to, quote, change in your lives, but like that drive to work, flooded with images, advertising images on billboards or the side of buildings or the cars themselves or the t-shirts we wear. I mean, a t-shirt would be a great example to, you know, you could have a corporate logo on your chest, or you could take a Sharpie and write something that you would like people to read. That would be a direct way to creatively involve. For the most part, a lot of people wear t-shirts, and a lot of those t-shirts have something on them. So in a simple way, it could be, you know, someone else's idea, or it could be your idea on your chest.
Yeah, totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, pipe dream style thinking that if everyone just had more, and when I say aesthetic taste, I'm not saying like there's a snotty standard of what that is, and it's like that's debatable across the board. It's what is it to you? But if we had those standards ourselves, then we wouldn't accept a lot of unattractive things that become saturated in our society, whether it's the actual artist or just the artistic perspective and process into these big giant processes that institutionalize our lives.
As we've mentioned before, you use your art to really communicate certain messages, and so I'm curious, what really matters to you? Like what do you want to be saying, and what do you feel that you are saying with your art? But what matters to you to communicate?
I like people to get the idea that the individual has both the capacity to express itself, and that essentially the individual, the every individual, has plenty to express.
Yeah. One of the last things that I want to ask, because I feel like that you are someone who thinks very deeply about things and has a lot of ideas around how things are and how things can be, and even in some ways how things should be. I'm curious if there's something that I haven't asked about that you feel is really important to talk about.
I mean, we could go down a list of political issues, which I think really kind of all lump together around just issues of compassion, slow understanding of each other, you know, patience, reading the book, as I like to say, which can be literally reading the book or reading the book of a situation, of an experience. If it's about people, which most of our situations are about people, then, you know, try to know who you're talking to, who you're talking about, who you're thinking about, who you might be concluding your judgment of. At least, not you have to, like, have a conversation with everyone that comes down the road. I'm very much not that type of character, but giving people the benefit of the doubt, giving them the opportunity in your own judgment, not because your judgment is of strength and power, but it very well can be, especially in the reflection of yourself and your own participation or your ability to participate in community. We're always a little bit closer to understanding each other better and involving ourselves in the works that we all do and how they interrelate with each other.
And then the way that we express that becomes our art.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that way, pursuing almost any deed, discipline, or, you know, industry even, can become an art form and a more artistic community to be a part of.
I end every interview with two things, and before I do that, I just, for people to be able to see your art, your prints and images of the paintings, the murals that you've done, all of that, to explore Nathaniel's work more, you can go to NathanielRoney.com, and it's Nathaniel spelled NathanaelRoney, Roney, RoneyR.com. So the way that I finish, the first thing is with a gratitude and then a last question. And the gratitude is just what I'm appreciating about you as my guest. And for you, what I'm grateful for is how you use art to incite and to encourage this perspective shifting and perspective widening, and to not let yourself go to sleep in life and to just keep going through the same things and the same things and believing what everybody else is saying and taking on what everybody else is doing, but to use art to wake up creatively to your life and to the world. And I really appreciate that you take that stance as an artist and that you then use your art to encourage that.
Well, I certainly appreciate that as well. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And then the last thing, which we've covered in a lot of ways, but the last question that I have is, with this idea that everyone is an artist and everyone is creative, why do you think, and just if there's anything more you want to say on this, why you think it's important that we each make our own thing?
I feel it's important to find the best in yourself. It creates just a slower conversation that doesn't really have any stake in taking advantage or exploiting the strength and access and power of other people.
Well, thank you so much, Nathaniel.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun chat.
Great.